This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
In the trenches of business, it's easy to lose sight of what matters. So partner with the bank that sees the bigger picture. NetBank Business Banking.
It is now 9 minutes after 7 p.m. Let me take this opportunity to welcome our Power Boardroom Roundtable guest. So that is William Bird, the Director at Media Monitoring Africa. Good evening, William.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thank you for joining us. Ian Jacobsberg is also joining us for this discussion. He's the Director for the Corporate Merger and Acquisitions. Thank you so much for giving us your time to talk to us about this issue as an attorney.
Good evening. Good evening to you and to your listeners.
This is a very tricky conversation to have because for the first time we heard of the SABC trying to tap into collecting revenue or making some sort of money from the online services. Of course, they are in a tricky financial position. But William, where are we in terms of this draft white paper on audio and audiovisual content services in South Africa?
So it's one of the misconceptions that it says that, you know, there have been a number of things saying that this is how the SABC will do it and that, Netflix will have to pay the TV licenses, all that kind of thing. It doesn't say that at all. What it talks about is that we need a new funding model for the public broadcaster, which I think has been on the cards for the last 15 years. And we need a better way of dealing with this issue of TV licenses. And I think we, you know, one of the other shifts that's necessary is to move away from this idea of a TV license, because of course at the time, you know, you could only really get your television on a using a television set. Whereas now, of course, you can get your television content, or now referred to as, you know, audiovisual content, on almost any device that you may have in your home. And so really what this is that this is a public broadcast content service fee as opposed to a TV license. And when you start to make that shift and you say, if we accept that a public broadcaster is an essential element of having a vibrant democracy, that in order for media plurality and media diversity, you need a functioning public broadcaster, then you have to say, well, how do we fund that? And what are the various mechanisms that we can look at? Now, once you start to accept that as a general proposition, which I think is a fair one, you then say, well, where does that money come from? And one of the issues that's being looked at around the world, in fact, is the idea of making some of these other newer services like Netflix and other social media platforms have some kind of contribution to a public service content fee of some shape or form. And in addition to that, you then say, well, what else? What are the other mechanisms? Because, of course, collection in South Africa is a problem. So one of the ideas that we've been floating is this idea that that multi-choice, as it stands, is currently already in over 50% of our households in South Africa. Yes. So imagine if they were to collect the license fee on behalf of the SABC, suddenly their revenue would jump up dramatically. Now, that's not saying that multi-choice should pay, but it is saying that they would collect on behalf of the SABC, and that's quite a different proposition. So I think the exciting thing is that we are looking at these viable alternatives, as opposed to saying, yes, we should do something. Whereas here we actually are talking about what that might look like.
Interesting. Ian, is this the right move to make, particularly in the current landscape of South Africa, seeing as, of course, we are behind when it comes to developments around this area?
Yes, well, I think the first question is the credibility issue. Unfortunately, the SABC has had its fair share of controversy over the last decade or so due to various people that have been in charge, corruption, political interference. And I think a lot of the resistance and the failure to collect has been around that goodwill issue and people not being well disposed to paying for a service that they feel they're not receiving, or that they feel the funds are not being applied in the way they should be. And that is, of course, a distinct issue from the practicalities of collecting.
Yeah. Absolutely. William, would you say that that is one of the major stumbling blocks? Although, yes, there is a white paper, but getting to that desired level of transformation in this regard is going to take a little bit longer right here in South Africa.
Look, there's no doubt. You know, I think that the SABC, like so many other critical institutions of our democracy, has been that, you know, it's been used as a political football. It's been used as a plaything, a playground of fools and idiots, frankly, you know, and corrupt, evil people also, quite honestly, you know, and it's only really in the last sort of 2 to 3 years that we've had since this new board and since the new executive management team have been appointed that you're seeing real and meaningful steps to address that. Now, if you, it's very easy to say, oh, well, of course, it's just going to go the way of SAA and all of these other institutions that repeatedly seem to make the same errors, and we seem to make the same errors and doing the same things with them. But actually, there are some significant, important shifts. If you look at the history of the SABC over the last couple of years, you'll see that when the ANC has gone and said, okay, you're not going to do this, they've said, excuse us, this is not your matter. Please step away. We'll deal with this. Thank you for your advice. When Parliament has said that, they've said, thank you very much. We'll heed your advice, but this is our decision, actually. So you've seen them standing up in a way that we have seen the SABC board doing for the last 25 years, basically. You know, now, that is a huge shift. The other huge shift is that they're saying, oh, look, we're in a new digital environment. It's only in the last 2 to 3 years that you've actually seen the SABC acknowledge the critical importance of shifting to digital, because that's where all the audiences are going. And if you look at the trends of public broadcasting around the world, that's where they're going. The SABC has world-class editorial policies. You know, it took them far too long to do it. But again, you know, we had Mr. Motsoeneng trying to do all sorts of illegal, hideous, horrible things in 2016, just 4 years ago, and then passing his own, you know, policies which were found to be illegal. So you've now got new policies which are world class. You know, these things are, you know, maybe there's not everything that everyone wants in them, but by no stretch of the imagination are they bad. They really are exceptional, you know, editorial policies. So you've got those things. And you've then also seen them actually trying to remove people who were illegally appointed and follow up on the SIU's recommendations. Now, imagine if that was a process that was occurring in any of our other kind of publicly funded entities. We'd all be jumping up and down from the rooftops, cheering and applauding. So I hear the point, you know, and I think it's a very valid one. People are duly skeptical and deeply cynical about saying, why should I pay more money for it to be pissed away by some bunch of lunatics and thugs who are going to just steal it or do other things with it? And yes, that's a completely fair and understandable thing. And SABC is going to have at least another 5 years of rebuilding and trying to build on people's trust and credibility. But let me tell you, if you don't have a public broadcaster that is independent, that is, and that is able to function like that, it doesn't only weaken the media sector, it weakens your democracy. And that's been borne out by these kinds of fights that have been, you know, that have been occurring around the world.
Digital migration has also been an issue, Ian. The legal loopholes that we need to be jumping through in South Africa to bridge this gap that this white paper is seeking to do, how do we go about doing that?
Yes, well, it's an interesting question around the digital migration and around the new range of devices. As William said originally, when this legislation that's currently in place was passed, a television set was your conventional box that stood in a corner of your lounge or bedroom. And now we all have portable devices and all sorts of other devices that are equally capable of picking up signals, television signals. And it must be noted that the obligation to pay a license fee has nothing to do with the services you're picking up on your device. It actually has to do with owning a device. And which then, of course, raises an interesting question, because there are currently, the legislation says that any dealer who sells a what is defined as a television set, that very wide definition of a television set that I mentioned, is obliged to ensure that the purchaser of the device has a license. They're not obliged to collect the money at this stage, but they are obliged to ensure that the person has a license before they supply the device. Now, are you going to, and how practical is it to extend that to, for example, the cell phone networks who supply devices as part of contracts? Are they going to have to insist that everybody who acquires a smartphone has a TV line?
That broadens the conversation, William, far more to what we were thinking about. But when I'm thinking about it in the long run, should that not really be the case? Because we are already recurring in terms of owning a SIM card, for instance, to operate even a phone. Would that not be what maybe we should be going towards?
Yeah, maybe. But you also don't want to be in a position where you unfairly prejudice a family. So, for example, if I live in a family and I have one device that we're all sharing, you know, in my case, I'm lucky. I'm middle class. You know, if me and my wife have a device, that's fine. You know, we could afford the extra money for that extra license. But if you are in a poorer family and you happen to have another device, then that would, you know, significantly unfairly bias you. So I'm not sure that that is the best way to go on this. You know, what you do want to do is you do want to make sure that people are making some kind of contribution. Of course, the biggest problem with a TV license fee is, as it was called, slash now a public, you know, content fee, would be that it's an unfair tax to the extent that 300 Rand odd per year for people like us is not that much money. But if you are living in an informal settlement and you are surviving on, you know, support, basic income grants, 300 Rand is a huge amount of money, you know. So it's not something that is applied fairly. So we do need to find a better way of doing it that means that we don't unfairly bias against the poor. And that, but at the same time, we need a mechanism that's going to be robust, that is, that people can't just skirt around. Because at the moment, we know that the law as it stands is the law that your colleague has just said, which is that if you go into any shop now and buy a television set, you are obliged to show them your TV license. Now, of course, people just get away with that. They either bring in an old one or they bring in one of their neighbors.
Yeah. It is quite a tricky one in South Africa. And, you know, it's concerning that we tend to even sometimes chuckle at this culture of doing so. But another important issue here when we talk about barriers to entry or access, Ian, is that this essentially means that one would have to be at a financial level to be able to be a participant in this online marketing. If we are to basically cross over to this digital world, how many and who are we leaving behind? And what then is the obligation of the state to migrate everyone else?
Yes, well, that as William pointed out, the demographics make this very difficult because, as we all know, cell phones and smartphones are ubiquitous. Virtually everybody has one, and there are probably, I think it is a fact, that there are more cell phones in use than there are fixed line telephone services in use. And so that is, becomes a very, very difficult thing to monitor if we are in a position where everyone who owns a phone that can pick up a video signal has to pay a license fee on that. But both in terms of the cost, as William mentioned, relative to people's means, and in terms of the sheer numbers and the traceability of these devices.
Yeah. William, would you say that maybe it is slightly a bit too early for South Africa to even be attempting to jump into this playing field? Yes, we are at a stage of discussing only a white paper at this stage.
Look, I don't think so at all. You know, where if you look at the way that this process is going to unfold, we had a white paper process draft, then we'll get a proper white paper, and then they might skip the green paper process and just go straight to a draft law, and then that's going to be, you know, then debated and whatever, and then there'll be another whole process for that. And as you've seen with a lot of these kinds of things, where you are introducing significant changes, we're looking at a process that's at least 3 to 5 years in reality. So, you know, we do need to be thinking about that. And I think that you know, the point you're raising is excellent, which is that at the moment, some of the big problems that this doesn't address are our government's, you know, own fault, you know, quite frankly, which is that we haven't done anywhere near enough to make sure that more people have access to the internet.
Yeah,
that's one of the critical, shameful, embarrassing, humiliating failures that we face as a nation. Mm. We should by now have had, you know, almost everyone on having access to fast, cheap broadband. The fact that we don't is embarrassing for our nation, and frankly a violation of people's basic rights. So that's something that, if we, as we go through this process, we need to be banking on the fact that in 5 years' time everyone has that. Well, that's not really a hard thing to do. Again, these things are about political will, making the right choices, and actually implementing these kinds of things. You know, the time for, okay, well, we'll think about it, and yes, we'll do, you know, 100 schools by the year 2050, is just no good anymore. You know, people need these things because this is about our nation's survival. Evidence around the world is overwhelmingly clear that one of the best ways of generating economic growth is giving people access to the internet, precisely because it opens up a world of whole other, you know, exciting opportunities, etc. So unless we get that right, you know, these kinds of things are, you know, aren't, it's not that they're not important, because they are obviously critical, but, you know, their opportunity for success is going to be hugely hampered if we don't get that kind of stuff right. You know, we shouldn't even be talking about DTT. It's gone, it's past, it's over, it's finished, it's kaput. What we have to do is make sure that everyone gets access to this. It means we need significantly, radically reduced data rates for people, so that people can get access to the internet. Because until and unless they do, we're going to continue, you know, this digital divide, and all of the kind of services that we're looking at trying to address and building media diversity are going to be reduced. Why? Because people in rural areas, people in peri-urban, and even in urban areas who want to start their own little news service or whatever, they can't do it because they can't afford the data costs. So those barriers to entry are going to, again, prohibitively and, you know, be against the poorer people and overtly favour those who have means.
And COVID-19 has done exactly that on that element, William. And I want to ask you, Ian, about the pace at which we are going at in South Africa with the issues of migrating at a faster pace into getting a playing spot in the sandpit of moving to the digital world. To what extent can we actually say that there may be no political will right now, based on maybe that the argument stands that we as a country have far more other issues to focus on? Because when you look at what is happening in the education system with COVID-19 online learning, it has extremely disadvantaged those who do not have access to this market. How then do we continue or start to build at a playing field that is equal?
Yeah, well, I sort of don't profess to be familiar with the economics of it, but it clearly is a concern. And it's a concern because it's never been part of our system. Suddenly, the pandemic hit us a few months ago, and people were suddenly discovering what the value of having access to online facilities and to the internet was, and what the disadvantages were of not having it. But we never previous to that, for the most part, considered it. And those of us who, once again, getting back to the economics, were fortunate enough to be able to migrate to it easily, and from an education point of view, the more privileged homes that already had devices and laptops and tablets available to them were able to adapt to it. But those who don't have those facilities were not. And we're still a long way down the road. We have a long way to go before we're there.
Mm. A long way to go. Definitely we do. We are in conversation with William Bird, who's the director at Media Monitoring Africa, as well as Ian Jacobsberg, the director for corporate mergers and acquisitions and competition at Tebex Attorneys. We are in discussion in this week's Power Boardroom segment, talking about the government's draft white paper on audio and audiovisual content services. Of course, we would like to hear your views as a Power listener. Do give us a call on 0861-987-000. On WhatsApp, we take your voice notes on the number 083-303-7093. On Twitter, we are found on the account at PowerFM987 using the hashtag PowerBusiness. And your emails, we take on the address powerbusiness@power987.co.za.
Today's wrap of top business stories.
Power Business with Dumisang Ndlovu, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. and Fridays, 6 to 7 p.m.
7:33, we are still continuing with our conversation in this week's Power Boardroom segment, talking about government's draft white paper on audio and audiovisual content services. Of course, we would want to hear your thoughts on this one too. Do give us a call on 0861-987-000, on 083-303-7093. We take your WhatsApp voice notes, and on Twitter we are found on the account at PowerFM987 using that hashtag PowerBusiness. So your emails, as always, you send those to the address powerbusiness@power987.co.za. We are in conversation with Ian Jacobsberg as well as William Bird. William, let me come to you on the issue of the existence of political will when it comes to this matter in South Africa. Would one say that that even exists?
Well, I mean, you know, our recent history would suggest no on, to a large degree, but I think that events have kind of overtaken people, you know, and that we are in desperate need of a policy update, you know, being 15 to 20 years out of date with where everything is. And, you know, that said, in as much as there may be some key areas in this policy that are needing a lot more definition and things that need to actually have real ideas put behind them. Mm. We really, you know, it is a significant and important and really positive step that government has put this out. And that, I think, is a significant step, you know. So it is very easy to say, well, it could be a lot better and.
Yeah.
But the nature of these things is that you start somewhere. And I think to that extent, it's a very positive step. There are some very you know, interesting ideas. The thing about you know, foreign ownership, about cross media ownership, I think are very you know, there's some quite radical ideas there in terms of what kind of impact that may have on our media sector. So you know, it is then going to be about, well, how do they do it? I think one of the worrying areas is that it seems to be removing power from ICASA. To some degree, all of us can understand that, because ICASA for the last decade has been a flaming disaster, being under-resourced and under-capacitated, and then also being beset by a massive internal infighting among the councillors. So again, a tragedy when it's also an absolutely critical institution. And if you look at the role of those bodies in countries that are doing this, you know, you need stronger, more efficient, well-resourced entities that are doing those jobs, not ones that are barely able to function, which is kind of currently the state that our poor regulator finds itself in. So we do have a long way to go with these things. And again, if, you know, some of these political games trump the ability to, and nowadays Trump is a negative word, isn't it? If some of those abilities do actually trump sense and logic and taking the public interest forward, then yes, we may lose this. But this is why we need, you know, stations like yours having the discussions, getting people interested, excited, so that they're not prepared to tolerate when people decide to play around with a process that actually is meant to be in the public interest, not in a party political interest.
And functionality does need the correct bodies to ensure that regulation is followed to the letter. Ian, here we must talk about the onus then on us as consumers in South Africa. From a personal point of view, I'm all too happy in this process, and I speak from a privileged position that I don't mind paying for the online services that I receive, moving at a faster pace and so on, and making my life easier. Now, once regulation finds me on this bus that's already moving, how do I then begin to trace my mind back into compliance?
Well, I think in the first part of your question, you hit the nail on the head. You if you're receiving a service and you're happy with the service you're receiving, you don't mind paying. And I think going back to what William said earlier, if the SABC is, and bearing in mind it takes turning a battleship is quite a feat, if the SABC is turning around into an organization that is going to render a service that is considered by the majority of the population to be worth paying for, then there will be less resistance to paying for it.
Absolutely. William, let's go back to the issues that you raised in the opening of the second half hour when you were talking about the cross-border element of this discussion. It is likely to change the dynamics of the media landscape in South Africa. Are we ready for that?
Well, we're going to have to get ready. I mean, and again, these are really exciting things because one of the really incredibly positive things, I think, is that they talk about African ownership as being considered as local. So firstly, one of the significant shifts is that they talk about suggesting that you can have foreign ownership up to 49%. In other words, if people were to come and buy Power FM, they could have 49% owned by someone from any other nation, right? But if they were an African nation, and they provided there's a reciprocal agreement, in other words, if Nigeria says, okay, you can also own stations in Nigeria and be considered local, then they could own, you know, a lot of Power FM. So this idea of kind of encouraging, you know, inter-African ownership and inter-African trade, I think is really important and such a positive kind of approach to our continent. And that's something that I think we should broadly welcome. Of course, it means we're going to have to set up and see if we can set up reciprocal agreements in, you know, a number of countries. But I think the possibility for exchange of ideas and content and all of these other wildly exciting things, I think is very positive and exciting. And then not only is it about foreign ownership, but then, cross-media ownership. So for the first time, MultiChoice has never been able to own, a radio station. Now they can.
Yeah.
They could own other media, you know. So there's a very interesting thing. Similarly, your media could go and buy, some kind of audiovisual content service. And that is very exciting. So it means that it is trying to open up the possibility for media to do different things. And at the same time, in as much as that's exciting, it's also kind of fairly logical because, of course, what you do now on Power FM, if you broadcast this on your website and you have small short videos there already to a degree, you're kind of already mixing up that content between pure audio of your radio and audio visual content. So, of course, it's kind of meeting reality anyway, but the fact that it's there and that we're talking about these things as opening up possibilities, I think is very exciting.
Oh, the possibilities and opportunities that lie are extremely exciting. Ian, let's look at the cons, though, because when we start opening up our trade, we have to also protect ourselves with regards to keeping ownership. And if one were to look at it in the dynamics of a local company, one would actually want to be a majority shareholder, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, as long as there is fair competition in the market and as long as the companies are able to compete on an equal footing and provide a service that is for the benefit of consumers. I personally, and I accept that's personal view and other people may have different views, don't necessarily believe that you need to have that type of protectionism as long as you have fair and open competition, which is regulated along the lines that competition would generally be regulated.
We had a discussion earlier on right here on Power Business this evening about the Competition Commission launching a regulation that would try to govern the digital economy, Ian. Would we then need to establish something like that when we open ourselves to the world?
Yes, I think we would. I think we've got to accept we're living in a global world. The internet, by definition, is the World Wide Web. And the very value of it is that it enables us to access the world. And so I think we do have to live with the fact, well, when I say live with it, I don't think it's a bad thing, that we are accessing content from businesses and institutions all over the world.
Yeah.
And so they have an interest, we have an interest in what they are doing, they have an interest in what we are, and we are already working with them.
Interesting view there. Ian, let's also talk about when we discuss protection overall on this matter. There are issues of cybersecurity. How do we tackle that front?
Are you talking about protection of information?
Protection of information. We know that Popeye currently in South Africa is another one that is moving at snail's pace, so we would have to fast track even that side of things.
Yes, certainly. And if there is an exchange of personal information online, then that whoever is receiving and dealing with that information will have to comply with the regulations and with POPI and the various regulations under it. And if this information is crossing international borders, they would have to also take into account the regulations that apply in whichever jurisdiction that information is coming from or going to. The laws of the various countries, whether it's Europe, whether it's in fact our own law, actually prescribe that you cannot engage in an international transfer of information unless the destination of that information provides an adequate level of protection equivalent to the level of protection that South Africa would in terms of POPI.
Okay, fair enough. William, regulation around advertising, that too is likely to change with this new dynamic.
Yeah, and this is where you start to, you know, most of these things sound lovely until you start to say, well, how on earth are we actually going to deal with this?
Yeah.
Because on a level, you say, well, you have to find some way of trying to deal with the advertising part. Because what you've seen, particularly with media sustainability around the globe, is that Facebook and Google have taken over 85% to 90% of all online advertising. So you're leaving a very small portion for other media, and you then say, well, how on earth are they meant to survive on that? So you've got to say, well, we do need to look at how we start to bring in revenue from that in other ways, and that advertising in other ways. But even if you solve that problem, your next problem then becomes, well, in South Africa, as they have in other parts of the world, we've got very very good laws around anti-tobacco advertising, for example. Well, how do we deal with that in an online environment? And how do you deal with foods that are high in fats, and salt and sugar, and saying, well, when is it fair and when can you and when can't you show those things? And how on earth are you going to tell one of these megalithic entities, no, well, you can't have those adverts that can be viewed in South Africa? So there are a whole range of very difficult things that we're going to have to deal with. And the thing is we must, right? Because you can't say, well, we'll just leave it if it's online. But then at the same time, if you've got a legitimate media company like yours, you have to apply and adhere to all the standard advertising regulations.
Yeah.
So surely, if you are coming in here, just because you're owned in America or wherever, you should also have to adhere to those, because if you don't, you're at a particularly unfair advantage in that you can generate income from, you know, all of these things that are currently not allowed in South Africa. So so there are ways of solving these things, so that they haven't really sufficiently unpacked them in this particular draft bill. So, we've got a long way to go before we do find answers to that. But again, it shows the kind of complexity of each of these elements. The moment you think, okay, we need to deal with advertising, you then go, oh gosh, well, how on earth do we deal with these elements around it? Because precisely as Ian said, this is a global kind of challenge. But the good news is because it's global, we can look to other parts of the world where they are to some degree ahead in terms of some of their experiences on these things. And we can also then learn from that and, you know, avoid some of the silly things that some other countries have done.
And I like that you highlight that there are test cases to learn from, and the US is one such good example. Ian, where else where we are similar in terms of an economy that South Africa can look to advance this project?
I think there are many countries and that we could look to, and we always talk about countries such as Brazil or the other BRICS countries as being similar to us from a demographic point of view. As William said, I think there are many different aspects that we can learn from different places.
Mm-hmm.
The advertising regulations, I mean, many countries have different advertising regulations, particularly around health issues and tobacco and advertising of medicines, and they do have systems in place, and we've got to go and look at those and see which ones suit our environment.
William, back to you on the possibilities that are out there. We must also talk about the feasibility of increasing foreign direct investment in the ICT sector with this particular element of trying to advance into this audio-visual content type of world. It's a playing field that really has no limits and no boundaries. So at that level, how much can we capitalize?
Well, we can. And again, I think that in as much as we look to doing that, we also have to say, well, let's just, you know, you can't just say anything goes, because we do have local industries around local content production, for example, that we need to make sure that they have a fighting chance against different entities that come in, and that they don't kill off our own local broadcasters, for example. So if, you know, I mean, Netflix, as a key case study, they've got, you know, relative to our budget, an almost unlimited budget. You know, the amount of money that they can pay for in dollars is more than, you know, the entire programming budget available to MultiChoice and the SABC, and they can offer that for one program. So when you start to look at, well, how do we deal with that in terms of you know, foreign direct investment and ownership, then you say, well, yes, we need to do it in a way that we encourage it, but also in a way that means that we aren't going to just set up our local entities to fail and just effectively fulfill some kind of new neo-colonialist structure that just sees ownership coming in and extracting value. And all of that money, again, leaving the country. You know, that's not what we want to do. We want to make sure that we have it, but that we build it and that we're able to build up our own skill sets and skills bases and produce great content. And we've seen that, you know, there are some examples of that. Netflix has commissioned some more South African series, which, yeah, I think is a good thing. But at the same time, you want to make sure that we are able to still nurture our own local content producers and entities like, you know, our public broadcaster.
Thank you so much for your insights, gentlemen. That's where we'll leave it. William Bird, Director at Media Monitoring Africa, as well as Ian Jacobsberg, the Director for Corporate Mergers and Acquisitions and Competition at Tabex Attorneys, this evening talking to us in the Power Boardroom Roundtable segment, a weekly feature. Tonight we were interrogating government's draft white paper on audio and audiovisual content services in South Africa, a matter that recently was brought up by the SABC in their attempts to seek revenue outside of the platforms with which they operate, and tapping into a market that speaks to digital migration and online services. What are your thoughts on this one? As always, we take your calls on 0861-987-000, on 083-303-7093. We take your WhatsApp voice notes, and on Twitter we are found on the account at PowerFM987 using the hashtag PowerBusiness. We also take your emails on the address PowerBusiness@power987.co.za.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.